The Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with a Disability handed down its final report and recommendations last week after receiving 7,944 submissions and held 33 public hearings. The Centre for Innovative Justice, the CIJ, at RMIT provided two submissions to the Royal Commission, which addressed the treatment and experiences of people living with a disability within the criminal justice system. A significant issue highlighted by the CIJ was the lack of recognition and support for those with an acquired brain injury within Australia's judicial system. The lack of support also causes difficulty for those with an ABI to meet NDIS eligibility requirements. To discuss this further, I'm joined by Stan Winford, Associate Director of Research, Innovation and Reform at the Centre for Innovative Justice. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on The Record.
Thanks very much. Good to be here.
So how do you define an ABI and how common is this type of disability?
Interestingly, in the prison population in Victoria, which is where I'm from, there was a study in 2011 which really came up with quite staggering statistics about the prevalence of ABI, which was that 42% of male prisoners in Victorian prisons had an ABI and 33% of female prisoners had an ABI. And the prevalence in the general population is somewhere between 2 and 3%. About 2 and 3% of people have an ABI, and yet in our correction system, they're very highly overrepresented. The Royal Commission said that, referred to a 2015 report on adult prisoners in New South Wales, which found that 43% of First Nations women had some form of disability, and between 40 to 90% of adult prisoners may have an acquired brain injury. So extraordinarily prevalent. What is an acquired brain injury? Well, the clues are in the term. It's something that is acquired rather than something that people are born with. So people are familiar with intellectual disability. That's something that that you have, it's a lifelong condition. And acquired brain injury is a disability that's brought about either by traumatic brain injury or things like loss of consciousness. And often that can occur as a result of things like family violence or as a result of use of substances. So, people who might lose consciousness a few times, they'll probably acquire a brain injury. And the impact of brain injury is quite substantial on, a range of functions that people have, including executive functions, so decision-making. And what's really sort of important about ABI is that it's often called the invisible disability. So, you can't tell that someone has an ABI just by looking at them. And sometimes, and certainly in the sort of justice system, one of the issues has been that ABI hasn't been identified when people come into the system. So the impact of that, of course, is that people can't get support that addresses that disability.
You were saying there were some very interesting statistics you gave at the beginning, and it sounds like it's quite a common of a disability. So why is it not recognised by the criminal justice system?
Several reasons. It's not been something that's been given a lot of sort of prevalence. It hasn't been something that people have been aware of in the community generally until more recent times. People are more aware of things like mental impairment and probably aware of intellectual disability, but acquired brain injury is really a disability that's, that people's awareness of is growing generally, and that's reflected in the justice system. I think the other issue is really the lack of screening and assessment that occurs. So the Royal Commission found that across different jurisdictions, there's no agreed sort of approach to identification and assessment. So when people come into the system, whether it's through contact with police or on reception into custody, there's usually something called screening, which is often a fairly straightforward and simple to administer set of questions that people receiving people into prison who are not trained as you know, forensic psychiatrists or people who are familiar with the medical or clinical aspects of disability, they will apply these tests. And one of the issues that's been raised, particularly in the criminal justice context, is that often those screening tools rely on self-identification. So the person themselves, this is a person with an acquired brain injury, which affects their capacity to, you know, to reason and often to respond to questions and to remember things, that person will be asked to nominate or identify themselves as having that disability. So that's the first challenge. The second one is that those people themselves may not have been formally diagnosed in the community, so they won't have a diagnosis, so they won't know that they have that disability. And then a third issue that arises, and this is really clearly comes through when in the work we've done, working closely with people with ABI who've been in prison or been in contact with the justice system, is that disclosing that you have that form of disability is, you know, makes you vulnerable to exploitation in prison. People can take advantage of you. It also makes you vulnerable to, differential treatment by police. So people who have an ABI might be more likely to agree to having committed offences when interviewed by police. So there are a whole range of reasons why that disability is not picked up in the system, and also, and as I said, that relates to how we assess it, but also that often it's put on to people with the disability themselves to raise it as an issue for them.
You're listening to On the Record. We're joined by Stan Winford from the Centre for Innovative Justice, and we're chatting about the recent Royal Commission report that was handed down. You were saying there some of the challenges and issues when it comes to identifying people with disabilities and recognising people with disabilities within the criminal justice system. Could you tell us a little bit about why the pathway between the criminal justice system and eligibility for the NDIS support is so arduous?
There are a few reasons for that. I mean, probably the first and most important one is that there's been uncertainty and confusion about funding, and that's because there's a view that within the criminal justice system, if the person's needs relate to needs in relation to their criminogenic supports, and by that we mean people who need support to reduce their risk of reoffending, if those are the needs that they have, then they will not be funded by the NDIS. However, the NDIS should fund disability supports for people. So what often happens is that when a person is in custody, when they enter the system, they haven't had the identification of that disability and therefore can't access support through the NDIS, or there is a question mark between the state and the state responsible for the criminal justice system and the National Disability Insurance Scheme about whether that support need relates to their criminogenic needs or their disability needs. And basically, as there's a lack of certainty or a confusion or even sometimes, you know, deliberate shifting of cost between the state and the Commonwealth, people with disability miss out and they fall through the cracks, so they don't get the support that they need. And another area where it's been a big issue, and this has been highlighted by the Disability Royal Commission, is that there's been a restrictive approach in relation to supporting people to transition from prison into the community. So currently the way the NDAA thinks about it is that they won't start considering support for people who are in custody unless and until they have a clear release date. So often in custody, it's not always clear when a person might be eligible for parole, because people can be eligible for parole that is released in the community while they're still undergoing a sentence. That date often isn't clear. And if if the support is not sort of available or the support's not beginning to be planned for or organised until that date is clear, then sometimes someone might get, let's say, released, before that support's in place. And of course, if you don't have that support, and the evidence is very clear about that, then it's more than likely that you'll return to custody. And in most jurisdictions in Australia, sadly, recidivism rates, that is the rate of people reoffending, is between 40 and 50% within 2 years. And this is just across the board. But for people with disability who don't have adequate support, it's probably a higher number. And, that speaks to the importance of ensuring that people with disability are able to access support, because the last thing that they need and the last thing that the community wants is for them to have to return to custody because they've been released without adequate support.
Yeah. With what you were explaining there, it sounds like there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to obtaining support within the criminal justice system. And I know that the CIJ, we spoke, you and the team provided two submissions, to the Royal Commission. What recommendations did you and the team make in the submission to improve disability support in the criminal justice system?
Well, I think the first thing that we identified in working with people with ABIs and other forms of cognitive impairments who've been in the system was that there are really four priority areas that need to be addressed. And some of those things are really about early intervention, so not necessarily things that you do once people are already in custody. And interestingly, when you look at the journeys that people take into the criminal justice system, often it's a journey into the system before people's disability is actually recognised and addressed. So we think that that early intervention is critical. So how can you improve pathways away from the system for people who might be at risk of coming into contact with it? And one of those key areas is really thinking about diversion. So diversion is an option where police, let's say, considering charging someone with a criminal offence, and they can refer them to court, but instead of the court convicting them and sentencing them and so on, there's often an opportunity to divert people into programs that respond to the underlying causes of offending and connect them with support services rather than going straight into the system. So early intervention is really important, and diversion. We also thought that housing was a very important area to focus on. So people with disability who, as we talked about before, with people transitioning out of custody, if they're exiting prison into homelessness, then, the likelihood of them returning to custody is extraordinarily high. And obviously it's a challenging area, as we know from national debates about housing affordability and homelessness. But nonetheless, we thought that secure long-term housing for people with disability would be critical, and that kind of housing that recognises the support needs of people with disability, not just a house, but somewhere that people can access the services and support that they need, is important. We also thought that there was a low level of disability and trauma awareness. So being aware of trauma is important in the system, because people who've experienced trauma, and many people with an acquired brain injury have trauma backgrounds, being aware of that context for people can help improve identification and enabling people to access support. And finally, we recommended improvements in system collaboration and information sharing. So an example of that issue was that we spoke with people who had been in and out of prison many times and not had their disability identified and not had that assessment take place, and therefore not received support, and as a result, cycled in and out of the system. Then those people might at some point, someone might recognise that they have that disability, and they might have an assessment, and that might provide really important information about what support is needed for them. But unfortunately, that information about their support needs or their diagnosis was not retained or shared. So even though that person had been assessed, they might return to custody and that, you know, they might come in with a blank slate again and no one would realise that they did have that disability and that information was already out there. So we thought that information sharing, appropriate information sharing, would be important. And the Royal Commission also recognised and supported that that approach. And, you know, you've got to be conscious of people's privacy and their right to keep information confidential. But in some cases, and people themselves with disability told us this, they were happy for that information to be shared so long as it was in to the end of achieving some kind of support for them. Obviously, you know, that's not always the case, but definitely that was something people said to us very clearly. They did support information sharing so that they could achieve supports in their journeys through the system.
We definitely did receive a lot of very interesting information out of this Royal Commission and the report that was recently handed down. And it sounds like we've got a good basis of where to start with these recommendations and others that came with the report. Stan, thank you so much for joining us on The Record this morning and walking us through the CIJ's submissions and what we could expect, what we got from the report,
Thanks. Welcome. Happy to talk about this. I think it's a really critical issue and one that the Royal Commission has given us a roadmap for addressing, and we're hopeful that that the governments nationally and around Australia, and the states will take it really seriously and address it, because it is really important, you know, to ensure that people with disability are not overrepresented in our system.
I agree. Again, thank you so much for joining us on the program. That was Stan Winford, Associate Director of Research, Innovation and Reform at the Centre for Innovative Justice, telling us about the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with a Disability.